you got to think back on each step that you took. You know, there was somebody to help support you, to help get you there. And if you can offer that back to people, I think that's a big thing.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. This is the Freestar Podcast, Blood, Sweat, and CPMs. I am your host, Jeff Kudashevich.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's me, Andy Forwork, your co-pilot, helping us navigate through this world of ad tech.
Thanks, Andy. Here's a quick rundown of what today's show will look like. On today's show, we're going to run through some Reddit AdOps threads for you, where Andy and I discuss some of the more hot button items of the day. And in the second half of our show, we have our special guest, Chris Hunter from IBM, where we're going to talk about what his day-to-day looks like and sort of get a little bit about what he does at IBM. Andy, are you looking forward to that or what?
That sounds awesome. But before we get into that, Jeff, how's your week going?
It's pretty good, man. We've had a productive week. We have some new hires starting who are getting ramped up. And I think, you know, just in general, trying to stay positive and keep a good mood, hopefully learn some things, hopefully teach some things, all of that good stuff. I think for the most part, things are going well. How about you?
Keeping busy, definitely keeping busy, but ready for some changes, I think.
What kind of changes are you looking forward to, Andy?
Well, I keep staring at these blinds in front of me. I might have to rearrange the office at home just to get a little change of scenery, if you know what I mean.
I do. It's funny. We have the Slack thread, the Slack channel, I did a thing at work. And I see all of these people installing doors and getting puppies and building decks and building retaining walls. And I'm just here like, yeah, I think I'm going to play Call of Duty. I think the only thing I've really done, if you want to call it a thing, is I continue adding to my TV shows I need to watch list.
Well, not everybody has to build a deck to get some enjoyment outside of work, right?
That's fair. All right, Andy, now the moment of truth. Our time to break down the top Reddit AdOps threads of the week. In case you don't know, which I would imagine most don't, I actually started the AdOps subreddit in 2012, and it's now somehow become one of the leading AdOps communities in the industry. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, it's a great community. Happy to be a part of it. I'm excited for this segment to just run down all the different threads that we see over the weeks and, you know, give our opinions on it.
Awesome, man. All right, Andy, first up, we have a thread entitled Media Math is, quote, to explore its strategic options. You know, this is, I guess, a story that we've been hearing a lot in our industry in general, in particular during COVID-19. There's a lot more consolidation, a lot more mergers and acquisitions. Media Math is a massive DSP. They unfortunately had to lay off about 8% of their staff in April of 2020. But at the same time, we sort of hear this happening kind of all over the place. And, you know, Seismic bankruptcy last year was massive and we all felt it. Unfortunately, it feels like maybe Media Math is kind of on the chopping block and trying to find solutions to, you know, weather the storm or find a strategic partner or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know how much I have to contribute here in the sense of why is this happening? Obviously the pandemic has kind of taken things to a new level of like, let's look at everything and kind of see how we're operating. Can we save costs? Are there things we're doing that, you know, are just unnecessary? And when companies raise lots of money and, you know, aren't able to recoup from that or, you know, pay that back, then, you know, you kind of find yourself in these situations of like, how do I get out of this?
Right. And yeah. And I think to that,
the pandemic doesn't help.
Yeah, for sure. And I think to that point, it's like, look, you know, we can raise hundreds of millions of dollars, which is great. And it's awesome when money is infused in our industry. I guess it's, well, what are you doing with it? How are you expanding? Are you growing your tools? Are you growing your products? Are you hiring strategically? Are you keeping a lean team and putting that, putting that funding into areas of growth? It's tough to say from an outsider perspective on what is going wrong. But ultimately, I do think there's got to be some, you know, long look in the mirror when you're, you know, when you have a large staff, when you, you know, when you do have this infusion of cash, what value are we providing? What are we doing? And, you know, certainly here at Freestar, we think about that on every single hire we make and every single new product we put out. And really, you know, is this bringing value? Are we in an echo chamber and everybody here just saying this is great and, you know, the marketplace doesn't care for it? You know, we try to be as thoughtful as possible and try to mitigate the missteps, or, you know, many people here like to kind of say the phrase like fail fast, right? If a product doesn't work, let's go on to the next one or, you know, pivot or something like that. The next thread is entitled "Explain Like I'm Five: Are Header Bidding Ads Contextually Relevant?" I love this thread, Andy. I love the question that's being asked. And the user is sort of talking about, you know, given the time that the auction has to take place, is there really contextual targeting, contextual relevancy per site or per category? What are your thoughts on that topic?
Well, okay. So the point of given the fraction of a second that header bidding auction happens, they're not wrong about that. However, the many sites that you visit, these SSPs are able to collect, you know, cookie data on you. And as long as you still have those cookies in your browser, you know, they're going to be able to transact on it. So I think there is truth to the contextual relevance, which kind of leads us to, you know, this cookieless world, and we're all trying to come up with alternate solutions. But this is happening. Like, I think the obvious evidence is to mobile Safari. You know, if you look at your spend on Safari year over year, you're going to see that the CPMs and probably your fill has kind of fallen over, you know, the last couple of years with all the changes that Safari's been rolling out. So I think it is there, and hopefully I explained it like you're five. Like the post
probably not. Maybe if like you're if five, I was 11.
I don't
11.
Know if you could understand. Could you understand contextual relevance if you were five?
Let me try it. Actually, let me try it. So, Andy, you're five. Should I call you Andrew? Hey, little Andrew. the way the internet works is you go on a website, and a website is any place you can go to see a different topic, whether it's sports or pets or anything like that, and get information. And for those websites to be a business and pay their employees, they have to make money, and they make money through ads. So this user's asking, will those ads be relevant to that website? So if I'm on a pet website, am I going to see pet ads? How did I do, Andy? You're five, or Andrew, I should say, five-year-old Andrew.
Yeah, that's still pretty good, but what's the internet?
Yeah, maybe I need to get that down. But anyhow, to this user, I'd say it's a combination of things. So to Andy's point earlier, you know, a lot of buyers are going to be buying based on your cookie data, your behavioral data. Certainly, there's going to be buyers who buy relative to the context on the page. They might be getting keyword information back from the site or from the SSP or DSP they work with. You know, some SSPs focus on retargeting. That user might get a completely different experience than other SSPs that don't. There's also this thought of like deeper into the session, right? Whether it's you're getting new ads on a next page view or you're getting new ads based on refresh. So, you know, the user talking about it has to make the decision in a fraction of a second. Yes, initially, if they literally have no information about you, but the second you start consuming content, reading articles, clicking on links on that site, their kind of algorithms and just the way they perceive your behavior on the site and the context of what you're clicking on, what you're reading, all of that's then informing those subsequent impressions. All right, our next thread is a little more technical, so Andy's going to take this one on. The title of this is, should I destroy DFP ad slots in lifecycle method component will unmount? And this is a SPA React question. Andy, I'll kind of let you take it.
Yeah, so the component will unmount method that they're referring to, if we want to get technical at all, is basically just a method that's invoked before a component is unmounted and destroyed. And what that kind of translates to is they're basically not going to use that that component anymore. And so in this context, it's around like whatever component they're using here is also containing an ad in it. And they're just asking, do I need to call this Google tag destroy slots? The answer is yes. So essentially what you're doing is you're adding an ad to a page, and then maybe the user navigates to another page, or, you know, they clicked on something and you want to now remove that ad slot from the page. You use this component will unmount function inside of your React framework. And you also will have to call these additional API calls to Google tag destroy slots that essentially just wipe that ad out from the page. So that on the next time that you want to call an ad, you know, you're invoking like a new slot and it's getting a new auction and everything else happens that should happen when you want to call an ad.
And that was technical operations with Andy Forwork. Thanks, Andy, for the answer. I have nothing to add. Thank you for being the person that can answer that I can't. All right. Next up, the thread is entitled Best Setup. And the user here is talking about they're a sports publisher. They're looking to make more money. Obviously, they have less traffic now, as we know. The user says they're doing header bidding through the Index Exchange wrapper, and they have a server-side demand set up with Amazon. He or she said they don't have Floor set up. They're using Kinatix for video. They have AMP set up with AMP RTC. I think it's a really interesting thread here from my perspective, Andy. This is sort of at the heart of what I love to dig into, is just general setups and how to improve. So from my vantage point, the first thing I would ask is, are they actually seeing a benefit in using the Index Exchange wrapper versus Prebid? Have they explored using Prebid, sort of, again, like the de facto wrapper in the industry? And I know Andy cringes anytime I say wrapper, so I'm trying to say it as often as I can. We could have a whole podcast about that word in this context. So that's, you know, first thought. Next thought for me is, you know, is there a variety of demand? You're talking about Rubicon, Cargo, Undertone, AppNexus, Conversant, Sovereign, AOL. Have you tried other partners? Are there any others that are missing from your stack that you might want to add? Like, I don't see OpenX and some other, bigger exchanges, you know, PubMatic and so forth. Have you tried A/B testing demand? What are your thoughts here, Andy?
Well, they have a very sophisticated setup, and you know, they're doing a lot of the right things. I would agree that, you know, testing pre-bid as opposed to what Index is giving you, I can, you know, say that pre-bid is, you know, somewhat more of a more customizable setup. There's a lot more that you can do that I know that you can do inside of Prebid. I'm not sure, you know, what your limitations are with the index wrapper. And there I go saying the wrapper word again that I'm so in love with.
Gotcha. Ding.
Yeah, I mean, I say it all the time here too. On AMP, you know, AMP is such an interesting beast. RTC config is probably the best thing you can do there right now, at least from what I know. But still it's questionable since it's such a mobile heavy product, like how much, you know, lift you actually get.
A couple of the other things I wanted to touch on just to sort of close the loop on some other things to look at, you know, rates and payment terms. Have you reached out to all of your SSP partners and just see, can I get an extra 2 points, 5 points, whatever it is? Maybe there's something you can do with payment terms. Some vendors will give up points in lieu of payment terms. So you might get, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5% better rev share if you can go from net 30 to net 45. And are you able to stomach that? If you are, great, go for it. Maybe that's an opportunity for you to just gain more CPM. If not, and you're a little more strapped for cash, maybe do the opposite. Hey, I'll give up 2% if I can, you know, move from net 60 to net 30 and see, you know, see if those conversations hold any weight with the SSPs you work with. Last item I wanted to touch on is just an ad product mix, right? So the user mentions 50 to 70-ish percent is going to AdX and they want a better distribution, which I totally agree with. That varies considerably site to site. We certainly see some sites that do much better with AdX and some sites that do much better with the header bidding partners. It is usually a bit of a mixed bag, but some ways you can try to shift the scale a little bit is see if maybe there's some products you haven't tried, sticky footers, sticky sidewalls, sticky right rails, dynamically loading ads and content, lazy loading ads, any of these sorts of things to increase your site overall viewability. We know in many cases, SSPs might not have as sophisticated controls maybe as you know, Google's ad buying platform. So giving those other partners a way to see a gain in overall viewability might have a bigger impact on them if they have less granularity. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're an AdX buyer, right, you might be able to say, give me ads in the 40 to 50% viewability range or higher. Whereas if you're maybe a share through buyer or a OpenX buyer, and again, I'm just using these as names. I don't work at any of these companies, so I don't want to claim what they can or can't do, but they might have different ways that they look at viewability, right? Maybe they're just looking at certain buyers want only 70% and higher and maybe don't have that same level of granularity as Google might. So anything that you can do to make your inventory more valuable overall, I think is the key here. Last thread I wanted to touch on, the thread is entitled, "Should I be concerned or just bad targeting?" I'm just going to read all of this because I think it's hilarious. So this is what
you have to. Yeah.
This is what the user wrote. "I keep getting schizophrenia meds commercials when I'm watching CNN on my desktop and tons of over 40 hair loss stuff on YouTube. As far as I know, I have no major mental illness except being an ad ops, and I have my hair and still a few years away from 40. What does Google know that I don't?" So I love this thread. I love, you know, where this user's getting at. I'm just going to kind of mention some of the ads that I just looked at when I was just doing some general web browsing. One is with an Asian actress, and the title of the ad is "Come As You Are, Light Ride by Crocs, and she's kind of like standing on a rock. And the other ad, also from Crocs, is entitled "As Rugged as You Are." It is also people in Crocs in the outdoors. For the record, if I do any outdoors stuff, it is not in my Crocs. The last one I wanted to talk about is a little funny, a little maybe to this what this user is saying. Yesterday, we played a virtual happy hour night where we did a virtual escape room with the team. And in one of the rooms, there was Monopoly kind of board game. And in the other room, there was a bunch of dice. And we thought the dice represented Yahtzee. If you don't know, Yahtzee's a kind of a classic board game. And I'm a board game snob, so that's why I call it classic. We said Yahtzee probably 5 or 6 times. And I kid you not, today I get 2 ads for Yahtzee. I've never played Yahtzee. I have no interest in Yahtzee. But a day later, I get display ads for Yahtzee after saying Yahtzee on a Zoom chat. So that's my take on this hilarious thread. Andy, what do you got to say?
Wait, Jeff, are you saying that this guy talks about schizophrenia a lot?
I would say more than likely, you know, it's the sort of thing where some people, they have a cough and they go to WebMD and it leads them down a crazy rabbit hole and they don't know what they have at that point. So all I'm saying is maybe this user does a lot of searching that they forget they've done.
Yeah, it's totally plausible. I guess maybe I'm a little bit just tone deaf to it after working so many years in this industry. I've seen ads that I've laughed at. And, you know, like the classic example for me is when you hear about someone complaining about getting all these dating ads. Well, like maybe you're dating and you're online dating and that's why they're targeting you. And, you know, like that's okay. You shouldn't feel slighted by that. But it does have that uncomfortable context for some people that, you know, maybe are just not aware of what advertisers are able to see. And, you know, it all goes back to the cookie. And if you look at the cookie laws, I mean, when Zuckerberg was in front of Congress, you know, questions were asked where to us in the industry, we're like, well, we know how to answer that, but they still don't know. So, you know, look, there's all kinds of people out here in different areas of expertise and how they make a living. And there's one common theme. We all go on the internet to find things. So, you know, this user is a little bit more like, hey, am I getting these ads because I'm talking about something? Maybe like Jeff, you're alluding to, like just even being on Google Hangouts nowadays, like they have a closed captioning option. So if you don't know that, they have that. They are translating what you're saying on those meetings and who knows what they're doing with it, but you know, hopefully I'm not scaring people either.
I was going to say, I don't know if you remember on our talk with Ashley Wheeler from Rubicon Project, she sort of mentioned when she tries to scare her mom, she'll tell her, you know, we know everything about you, you know, like that. Kind of tongue in cheek, obviously. So,
yeah.
All right, Andy, I think I'm pretty done trolling Reddit threads. What do you say we switch gears?
Yeah, sounds good. I'm not sure about this Reddit thing anyway.
Well, we'd like to go ahead and welcome our special guest, Chris Hunter from IBM. Chris is a digital media vet with nearly 20 years experience managing P&Ls and developing strategic partnerships for some of the biggest brands on the web, including IBM and The Weather Company, Yahoo, and USA Today Sports. Chris's career has spanned across multiple verticals and various roles. Today, he's excited to be part of IBM's Watson Media and Weather team, where he helps by leading global strategy and business development. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Good to connect and talk through things with you. And we'll talk a little bit more about your time at IBM and sort of get into things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, I guess it all spanned from being an unsuccessful salesperson and finding and that coupled with the dot-com bust of like 2000, 2001 and figuring it out from there.
Nice. So Chris, you know, IBM, big name, right? Built, yeah. You know, first computer, I think, and, you know, really became a staple for people at home. So what's the typical reaction like when people hear that you work for IBM?
I think when I first joined people, I think people didn't quite understand the move given my experience, I should say, in digital media and consumer. But ultimately, you know, our group, Watson Media and Weather, we operate the Weather Channel. That's IBM's biggest foray, I would say, into the consumer space. But then when I get a chance to explain how all of that pieces together, because I think everyone's been thinking IBM, Watson, Jeopardy. And you spend a little bit more time understanding everything that IBM does. It's really fascinating. And it's this crazy learning curve for you know, me.
Chris, do you ever get any kind of IBM digital media? Any of those like funnier reactions or anything to it?
Yes. Yes. I don't think a lot of people necessarily even understood that the weather company was part of IBM. Like you said, Andy, a lot of people associated IBM with supercomputers, increasingly with Watson. And IBM has this rich and storied and just massive history in the world of computing. But I don't think people necessarily always understood that the weather company was part of it. And the weather company is a top, you know, 10, 15, you know, consumer brand. And so once you get a chance to explain that and our ability to use Watson on you know, sort of the advertising, Watson advertising, I think people's eyes open. But IBM certainly helps get people interested. It's, you know, right. It's a great introduction point.
Yep. Open some doors that maybe otherwise wouldn't.
Chris, you've worked for some heavy hitters. If you look at your resume, IBM, Yahoo, USA Today, what are some of the business mantras you've been able to live by to succeed in those circles?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, each of those brands you mentioned are you know, sort of really, really sort of infused in sort of the ecosystem, especially in the United States.
For sure, yeah.
And, you know, they've all been, they're very different too, in where they came from and sort of the evolution of their own companies. So I've always tried to just come in and learn as much as I could, as fast as I could, understand mm-hmm. how they operate, you know, sort of build the relationships with people who've been there. And in some ways that's great because as you can introduce new colleagues, you can sort of help be that bridge too. But each of them are different. You know, sort of I've also done sort of the startup thing where, you know, everybody does everything.
Right. Yeah.
And I think if you're always willing to lend a hand and do whatever it takes to help somebody, they'll lend that hand back. And that's sort of, I think, the mantra that I've always tried to sort of live by is any job that needs to be done, I'm going to try to help wherever I can.
I love that. That's a really good philosophy, and you know, good to know that seems to transcend both the sort of startup worlds you've been in, and also you know the kind of the name brand blue chips out there as well.
Yeah, they it is. I mean, Yahoo, especially when I first joined in you know a long, long time ago, and in the early days, we'll call it.
Everybody, that's nice. Not dating any of us, the early days.
Yeah, I don't even admit, you know, how old I am and feel in days. But yeah, we were learning as we go. I mean, I worked on the Yahoo Finance property and just the team that built that, the original sort of product team, the original GM, a lot of the people were still close and we still are in contact, but sort of bringing that user experience of checking, like, the stock quotes in the WSJ, for example, every day to online, like it was new paths and things like that. So it was a really fun curve. And then, you know, you talk about some of these others that have, you know, USA Today, for example, it's based in newspapers. It's a completely different type of experience. You're trying to sort of bring digital forward. And I was fortunate to work with some awesome people, who were trying to do that too. And working in sports, for example, was a blast.
Chris, sort of get us more present day, you know, at IBM, you know, whether it's the brand or the scale, you know, I'm sure plenty and plenty of deals come your way. So just, you know, for people sort of trying to understand how your take on this might go, you know, when you're vetting a partner or a vendor, you know, what are the things that you're sort of looking for to make sure this is a good deal, this is a good relationship that we're going to jump into?
Yeah, it gets, I mean, in some regards, it gets back to those mantras. Like, I've always felt that the word partnership is such a strong word as opposed to client. I don't know why, it's just been a thing for me. But each of those, I think you've got to understand, or I like to understand and think about how each party, like how it benefits each party, right? If I'm going to work with a partner, I want to make sure that it's going to work for them as well as it's going to work for us. Obviously, we have our own interests first in mind, but if it's completely lopsided, it's not going to last. And I think those long-standing, you know, sort of relationships where you build and you're in there together, I think are the ones that are going to thrive. Also, what it looks like when you launch and what it looks like in a year rarely are the same thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I've had deals in the past, and this is not an IBM thing. This is a like sort of more of a career history thing where you've tried to so tightly define a deal that, you know, a year in internet age is eons, right? And so you go there and you've done this and you've put everything in a box, and then you realize that, wow, this box is broken. you want to make sure that you have that relationships, people's goals, and you're honest about those goals are clear, and then you can kind of be flexible and grow. And some deals work and some deals don't. But I mean, ultimately, I think if you go in there with kind of a shared set, a clear understanding of each person's needs, I think it helps a lot.
So kind of along the lines of that, what are some, you know, interesting ad technologies you get to play with at IBM or at the weather company?
You know, we have an amazing team on Watson Advertising, and they've been thought leaders in the industry and taken advantage of sort of all of the opportunities I imagine that are out there to try to just bring the best advertising solutions to our users as possible. Like sort of the recognition, if you're trying to drive revenue, obviously, but you also want to make sure that the experience is the best you can for your users. And we care a lot about like those net promoter scores and things like that for our site, or sites, I should say.
So Chris, that's interesting. You guys survey your end users as well?
There are teams within the Weather Channel that care. I mean, we care a lot about the end users and understanding the feedback. We spend a lot of time on sort of the customer reviews and things like that.
Got it.
It's important as, I mean, it can't be the sole input for developing product roadmaps, but it's definitely an input. And there's a focus on ensuring that we're always listening and improving. IBM brings a lot too. I mean, the Watson Advertising product team is interesting as well. They've done a lot. They've brought a lot of products to market. One that was announced at CES is called Watson Ad Accelerator, and it's really focused on improving sort of both. They'll kill me if I say dynamic creative optimization. Alone, because it's so much more than that. But it's a really impressive sort of product that helps bring creative and user optimization. So trying to sort of fast track the idea of making sure that the right user is getting the right creative at the right time, the right format, the right message, all of that in clear privacy compliant ways. But, you know, having IBM support us is I think a really, really cool advantage and opportunity that our team. So when it gets to ad tech, there's a lot of really interesting development by our product team too, that beyond sort of just the third just the third party relationships that we all have.
One thing that I'm particularly interested in, Chris, from just a kind of a data perspective, right? So, you know, there's always going to be noise and some signal, you know, knowing that you guys just deal with a crazy amount of volume, you know, philosophically, how do your business teams, how do you guys try to identify what I would call like a real trend, like actual signal versus all of the, you know, all of the noise that kind of comes with that much volume that you deal with?
Now, that's a great question. And I think we rely on some really smart data scientists and analysts to help out, to help call that noise. And really, a lot of these people they're really trained on understanding what are the core metrics that drive the business and are focused on that. Is it's easy to get distracted by a trend to the right or to the left, like you said, but having these people being so laser focused on the metrics that they know drive the business is something that we are beneficial of having such a good team there.
And are just kind of along those lines, are there particular things that, you know, around data that like keep you up at night? That, you know, if I don't see this number above this threshold or below this threshold, like, you know, you're not going to have a good week or something like that. Anything you can kind of speak to around, you know, what really drives you?
Yeah, I it's interesting. I mean, there's this world that we're currently living in right now, which is
sure.
Which, if you look at any of the industry reports you read, and you're trying to understand kind of the industry trends and how your individual inventory is sort of trending against that, it's also new. It's so hard, but it's interesting. I was thinking about this too. I spent a lot of time on Yahoo Finance in my life, and now I focus a lot of my energy on the weather company. Both of them are really interesting if you kind of take a step back, that they're both very data driven from a consumer standpoint. And in many cases, they're event driven. But unlike sports, where you've got, you know, a calendar of events, like, you know, you've got the Super Bowl, you've got the World Series, these are unplanned events. And so you get these yeah. crazy spikes. So you try to bring logic and history and understanding to those unplanned events. So for us, in particular, we know that, you know, sort of storms are a big driver. Severe weather is a big driver. So, you know, that there's a controlled and an uncontrolled part of those businesses.
You know, one thing that I wanted to, you know, see what from your experience, you know, we sort of all sit in on webinars and industry events and all of this, you know, kind of networking when we can, obviously. Are there any particular memories from an event, whether it's was an internal event or external event, that really sticks out for you as far as a favorite goes?
You know, there's one that has always stuck in the back of my head. I don't know if it's the best, but I sort of have never forgotten it. It's probably 15 years old. And it was at a client event, and it was in the financial services. And the CMO was speaking, and he was talking about how basically content, advertising is content from their perspective, and how important it was for them to make good content, to make the advertising, you know, sort of really speak to people. And it was one of these things that, like, I never thought of it that way, but like I said, it's always stuck with me. The advertising market is obviously competing for the attention, the sort of limited attention of consumers, just like, and so the better of a job that creative can do to pass along that message, and maybe it's using celebrities, maybe it's using comedy, but it was just a statement that I heard, hadn't thought of before, but totally resonated, because you're not competing, like in sports, for example. ESPN is not only competing against Fox Sports, for example, or, you know, we have our own competitors in the weather space, but you're also competing against Google. You're competing against Facebook. You're competing for limited attention. So you've got to do a really good job of getting that content and that value to your users. differentiating yourself.
And you're also sort of competing with the actual content on the page too, right? Mm-hmm.
As a marketer, you are for sure. So that was just one in an early ad sort of event that I went to that just made me think differently.
So, Chris, what's some advice that you could share with people looking to level up in their industry?
And it's nothing new. I think it's you know, sort of be authentic and work hard and sort of be nice. Right.
Be nice.
That's a big one. Be kind.
It's a really big one, huh?
But also, you got to think back on each step that you took. You know, there was somebody to help support you, to help get you there. And if you can offer that back to people, I think that's a big thing. And I think that's an important thing is, I don't know if it's giving back, but ultimately, like, you've taken those steps. And if you can lend some time, even if it makes your day a lot longer, to help somebody get there, as long as they're willing to put in the effort and willing to try, I think it's a really good investment in time.
I love the concept of being authentic too, right? So one of the things that, you know, I think about when, you know, when we're hiring and we're between two candidates that are both, you know, great for the role is it's easier to work with like happy people who have joy just, you know, in them, so to speak, and have that kind of authenticity as well, knowing that, you know, if it's going to be a bad day, and certainly there's plenty of bad days where, you know, even in good times. So knowing that you can kind of be in that foxhole with them, so to speak, and fight those battles together. And it's, you know, it's going to go as smooth as possible, all things considered. Right.
Totally. I think the enthusiasm too is an important thing. It's interesting when you interview, like bring up interviews, like I always find it interesting to understand and hear what questions candidates have, like how much research have they done, like where is their interest? And I think that's always pretty telling to see the people who've really invested the effort into understanding your business and coming with ideas and stuff like that. And, you know, that was one of the things that when I learned early on is sort of bringing those thoughts. It could bite you sometimes if those thoughts aren't necessarily good, but it shows a level of effort behind, like, you're not just sure you have to answer questions, but you've come and you've tried to do the diligence to at least bring something more to the table.
For sure. Sort of the last thing for us, Chris, you know, obviously this year is probably showing us more than ever. It's hard to know what tomorrow is going to bring, but I'd love to hear from sort of your point of view, your perspective. Do you sort of see any trends, you know, in the next few years, 3 to 5 years, something like that, where, you know, you can kind of see how things are going to evolve and what to sort of expect in our industry?
Yeah, no, I think these last few months have really made a lot of people, I guess, focus on sort of what really does drive the business. We sort of talked about this a little earlier, and what are the core things in the values that you're offering to, be it your consumers, your clients, your partners, if you're in tech versus a direct-to-consumer type business, like really making sure you understand those things and excel on those things is what's ultimately going to keep those relationships with the consumers, your partners alive. I think, you know, sort of the consumer empowerment as it relates to privacy and the ability for people to control their own data. I mean, that's an important thing. I think it's probably a good thing. I'm not an expert in that field by any means, but those brands that honor that, obviously, but think about product development in a way that services that, and it makes consumers feel like they understand what they're getting out of it, I think.
Right. No,
grow. Yeah.
Totally makes sense. Well, Chris, we really appreciate your time today. I had an absolute blast picking your brain, and thank you for some of those really golden nuggets you shared with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun. So I'd do it again sometime. I'd love to.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris. Have a good one.
You too. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Well, that was awesome. Special thanks again to our guest, Chris Hunter from IBM. It was great speaking with Chris today.
Cheers to that.
A reminder for everybody that the links for the Reddit threads we discussed will be in the show notes if you want to check them out afterwards. Thank you again for everyone who made it this far for the Freestar Blood, Sweat, and CPMs podcast. If you do have a spare moment, please check us out on Google Play or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review and subscribe to make sure that you get all of this high quality content directly into your ears. For feedback or suggestions for guests, you can reach us at podcast@freestar.com. Special thanks to Matt Hanline for our music and to Caroline Romano and Paolo Bautista for helping with editing and production and making sure that people know this podcast exists. Until next time, don't forget to add your macros.
Later, alligator.